Grinding Gear Podcast, everybody. It's still September, so it's still the Patreon-a-thon. Head on over to supportourbromance.com. Check it out. If you're not supporting us on Patreon, we would love it if you considered it. We're really close to our next goal, and it's looking like I will have to dress up for our next stream.
Hell yeah.
Something like, I do believe we hit our daily goal from yesterday. Shortly after going offline.
It was cozy. The beret was very comfortable.
We will be...
Excellent suggestion.
Beret bros tomorrow on tomorrow's Expedition 33 stream. That game continues to be amazing.
Yep, it sure is.
I love that game. Don't let how red my face gets sometimes during parry timings fool you. I love that game.
Oh, that's just like,
I'm red with love.
Yes, you can get good, but you can be like totally owning Sekiro and then find a boss that is just off rhythm and you're complete bane. And you got to get good for each individual boss a lot of the time in these sort of parry games. And this is not so different, though they do keep the MSQ very, the main story quest, very surmountable in terms of difficulty, which is nice.
No spoilers, but the multi-faceted section that we did yesterday was hard as shit. By comparison of other main story things we've done up to that point, that was quite difficult. So yeah,
the difficulty for me is on the range of.
We are set to expert, like, also, I guess is a good thing to mention.
But difficulty for me is on a range of apply yourself, hit your head against a wall. Where this is like F tier, you know, like basic good game. You respect it. You're gonna play the video game. Then we get into like serious mode, which is exit combat. Get out the pen and paper. Figure out my feats, restructure my points, put on the stuff that counters them. And then deep, deep on the other side is actually get good memorized timing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which I don't think like
I've been doing a lot more of in my solo play because we're if you're not aware, again, to the folks that only keep up with us on podcasts, we are playing through the whole game together in the same room with two controllers live on stream. And we basically pick characters. And if they end up getting attacked, we're up to the plate to try and parry or dodge or what have you. It's not a perfect system because there's plenty of party-wide attacks. And we tend to just get hit by those because we're not sure which one of us should be doing stuff. But anyway.
It's part of the fun.
And then after the fact, I come home and I play what we just played again with Katie because she's super into it. But she would rather have the high fidelity experience of seeing it on our TV, not through a YouTube compression.
Yeah.
And also we're a lot quieter when we play at home. She gets to just bask in the story and not listen to you and me, ha ha chuckling. So, which is a service we cannot offer. I don't know, maybe $10,000. I'll come play a game at your house, for you personally. I have my price. But
depends what you give me to work with. Yeah, you need to participate a bit.
Yeah, how does Katie like it? Katie loves it. Katie hasn't really wanted to watch me play a game in a really long time. I'm trying to think the first time that ever even happened. It was pretty early on with her and I living together. I think it was Last of Us.
Good choice.
There was a game, I think it was Last of Us, where I played more when she wasn't home, and she came home and she was like, oh frick, I really wanted to see what happens next. And I was just like, oh crap, I'm sorry, I'm just not used to you being into the game I'm currently playing. And so like when those moments pop up, like it's really special to me. It's like I think we've been living together for like a year or so, and so it was cool because other than that, we just kind of played WoW together every once in a while. And that's kind of how our gaming paths crossed. But yeah, no, she's super into it. She's really freaking into it. She's also like weirdly into watching me play Hollow Knight.
It's a watchable game for sure.
Yeah, yeah. She likes trying to crack where to go next. We just made it to Deep Nest. So like that whole place is a maze. She's like, I think you doubled back here. You should go back. You missed a turn. And then... at least so far, I don't think a boss has taken me more than 4 attempts. And I think it's just hard enough that she's entertained by how flustered I get because I overcome it fast enough that I don't become full on rage.
I feel like the wizard took me quite a few.
The wizard, you're talking about at the top of the crying city?
Yeah,
The city crying tears. City of tears. That's, I can never get the name right. City of tears. Yeah, that one didn't, I think that was a 3 try for me. That wasn't too bad. The Mantis Lords was a 4 try. They were bastards. I did not realize I could jump on the wall, though, that they were jumping on. And I feel like I should have put that together because I got the Mantis Claw from the Mantis Village. But I would also like to point out it took me a full week from finding the Mantis Village to find how to get to the Mantis Lords. So I found the Mantis Claw a week before I found the Mantis Lords.
That hole was not fair. It was slightly glowing, but the visual language
I found of that the hole was not right. But I went left first, and I think left is like a no-go because of spikes. I think it was as simple as I needed to go right, and I went left, and I assumed it was I didn't have the right tool for the job yet. And a week later, I was just like, oh, shit, I could have been here days ago.
I can tell you from my research of playing Metroid, Mission Zero, and Castlevania, that map is way kinder. Because trying to find holes you missed on a pixel map sucks. Absolutely sucks. Because everything is tiny squares. At least when it's drawn into the art, you can find where you're going.
Yeah. Anyway, it's really good. I gotta say, I think, chat, dear podcast listeners, there's nothing streamers like talking about more and everyone else hates hearing about more than how hard streaming is. Streamers love talking about how hard it is to stream and everyone else in the world wants them to shut up.
But
however, that being said, I think we can all agree that streaming a game is objectively a worse way to experience a video game. If you just want to like enjoy a game, for the most part, streaming it publicly is a worse experience than playing it by yourself.
I don't think it's about the audience. I think it's about cataloging your failure that is the hardest part, because our brains have a fabulous way of omitting the boring stuff from anything in our lives.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think that is personal, because I think there are people on this earth that like that does not faze them for a second and they do not care. And I am super jealous of people that's their personality. I think it's a really common roadblock to throw up for yourself if you want to get into streaming. You're like, oh, I don't want to fail in public. It's a hurdle you have to get over, even if you never actually get. Let me tell you, I still don't like failing in public. All these years later, I still don't like doing it, but you gotta get over it. That wasn't the point I was trying to get at, though. Point I was like, I just wanted to be like, can we agree that for the most part, most games are a better experience played alone than played with an audience? Just in terms of the speed with which you learn, the amount that you retain knowledge-wise, all that kind of stuff. That's how I feel. I'm like, in the rare occasion that I actually play something on stream and then play it a second time by myself, I learn better. I pick things up faster. I retain information better. Hollow Knight, I legitimately think might be better streamed. Because that one day you and I streamed it, my first experience with the game. Woo, was it nice with you and chat being like, hey, maybe you should just check that corner again. Just one more time. Cause I'm so lost in Hollow Knight right now, dude. I'm so lost. I have no idea where to go. I've seen every corner of Deep Nest and there's just some asshole sleeping and I don't know how to wake him up. And like, I'm so lost. And I'm like, this might legitimately be the first game I played where I'm like, this is unassailably a better experience with a crowd.
Interesting. I mean, that's all like, do you enjoy boss orders? You played quite a bit of Elden Ring. Did you look up a boss order list for that?
No, but if I ever pick it back up with the intention of beating it, because I've never beaten Elden Ring, I probably will. It's just too big of a game. I'm too like to get lost, distracted, and oh no, what a terrible thing to say. Satisfied before actually finishing it. It happens to me with every Bethesda game. I reach my own personal satisfaction long before I actually finish the main quest.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah. I also don't like the storyline of being a gladiatorial thief wizard all at the same time.
Gladiatorial
being completionist.
Wizard.
Yeah, being okay. A completionist in a Bethesda game is miserable for my immersion. I'm the best thief you've ever seen in your life, and I cast Fireball. Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's not stealthy at all.
It's not necessarily what I was getting at.
You go make a wizard, you complete the wizard tower in Skyrim, and then you make a new character in order to do the thief stuff.
Okay.
But
that's fair.
I think that's a completely fair take when it comes to Hollow Knight. I think that it is linear with getting lost enough that playing along with a guide, it would be completely satisfying, much like Dark Souls.
Yeah, I think I've reached a personal point of pain on the getting lost. I really enjoyed it, and now I have found enough zones with enough untied up loose ends that I'm just like, I'm kind of throwing my arms up. Like, I don't even know where to begin to try a test, and I know that if I take the journey to get to that one loose thread and I'm wrong, it's 40 minutes of wasted time.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It gets better with various power-ups and all that. And that's part of the joy of a Metroidvania is, you know, the navigation, your own knowledge plus the power-ups equaling speed. And I think that's why there's such a speedrun crowd around them, too, because it is so much fun to know where you're going.
Yeah. And I think I might be one of those, like, because if like I know I'm going the right place, the backtracking is really fun for me because yeah. I know the carrot that's on the end of the stick, but sometimes there's
you're hauling ass.
Sometimes like I think there's a carrot on the end of the stick and then there's jack shit. And yeah. that feeling is not great. It happened infrequently enough in the early game, but once you get past, I think like knowing where three of the zones are, at least for me, it has hit a point where I'm like, I've gone 3 days without finding a boss. I am officially impatient and I kind of want to look stuff up.
How many hours did I do? I did full no looky uppies, but I used a lot of those little pins on my map. And I did look up what I needed the lamp for because that was so expensive. I didn't want to waste my jewels.
I had to look up where to buy the lamp because I found one dark tunnel and I was like, okay, one dark tunnel, I can come back to this later. Then I found a second dark tunnel and I went, all right, there must be something that lets me see where the hell is the lamp. I had no idea. It was just like back at, what's his name? Cell.
Well, Team Cherry to me seems like a little trolly. And when you buy a game on release, I'm very trusting. Everything in the game is for a purpose. Mm. But if you buy a game like 7 years late, there's a good chance there's something in there that costs 3,000 geo that is completely useless because LOL the memes. Looks like I'd say about 25 hours. I hit the final boss and I went, cool. Sly. I'm looking up a boss list.
Sly is the guy. Yeah. 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 It's, I definitely, if I were to start this over again, I would keep better notes. Cause I forgot I had the Mantis Claw. Like I was just like, What the hell do I, like, cause I was just trying to like look up like what do I need next, but like don't tell me where it is, kind of a thing. And like so I just looked up like general order of items I already had, and I saw Mantis Claw and I'm like, wait, what? Mantis Claw? Where's the Mantis Claw? I already had it. Like I just forgot that's what it was called. So yeah, welcome everybody to my extremely late Hollow Knight experience that I'm sure you all had already.
You know, I'm sure it's relatable to Silk Song in some way.
This had to be, and I'm already like having extreme FOMO. This had to be the coolest game to play when it was brand new and nobody knew where anything was. There was no guy. And I think that to me, like maybe I'm romanticizing it. And if you experience this along with the launch of Hollow Knight, get in our Discord, write us an email, let us know. I would love to hear what it was like, but I'm really romanticizing this. I bet it was so much fun to be in a Hollow Knight subreddit, to be on a Hollow Knight message board or a Discord and sharing each other your discoveries, because this game just dropping with no guide, It's so easy to get lost. It had to be so cool to be like the first person to find out, you know, how to get to certain bosses or how to get into certain areas of the map. And that's probably what's happening with Silksong right now. And it's making me almost want to be like, I think I'm just going to go to Silksong and be a part of this new experience, and I'll come back to Hollow Knight.
I think the abilities do not entirely cross between the two, I hear. So I think you could do that should you want to.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard some talk I like the Next Liner podcast. I think they mentioned a few times that you can like swap out, I think, diagonal abilities for some more of the more traditional like cardinal like attacks, I think. But I don't know, and without playing the game, I don't really have the context for what that means or how much it would change your gameplay. If it's anything like getting the charm in Hollow Knight that stops you from getting knocked back when you attack, I probably wouldn't like it. I'd probably get so used to the way Silksong plays that by the time I can drastically alter how my attacks function, I probably won't want it. But that Silksong now, yeah, that's what it sounds like, you know? It's that to me is cool. Like, I'm really trying to go through Hollow Knight and meet the game on its, like, at face value, on its terms. But I'm like, I'm not even sure that's why so many people love this game. I think a lot of people love this game because it was this communal experience of this is a total mind effort. Let's figure it out together, y'all. And I bet that was such a cool experience.
It's just also just a really good one of those.
It is a really good one of those. Yeah, it is a really, really good one of those. So,
but
that's my checkup. I'm experiencing some friction, but it's not making me not like the game. It's just making me want to be like, all right, I think I might be done with my like virgin playthrough.
Don't be too hard on yourself here, because that was 2017 where live service games were popping off. That was Here's the Storm 2.0 for us. Like, there was so much to do in 2017. The fact that this still stood the test of time is just a testament of how well it plays and how much fun it is to play.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, that's what's going on in our lives. Again, a little shout out to our Patreon. Go check it out. Support our bromance.com. It is our Patreon-a-thon. We are very close to achieving our last few goals. So go check
it out. Thank you all so much.
Out. Got a lot of names again to thank this week. So thank you for signing up, everybody. All right. Well, let's talk about, well, that's enough about what's going on with us. Let's talk about what's going on with games. Let's get into this week's news.
Good. Oh, great news, everyone. Shove it.
We had a Kojima Productions presentation, a Capcom presentation, Split Fiction Award, Silent Hill F review embargo is over, and most people have already beaten the game because of early access. The future is broken. We've got Xbox increasing prices, Fortnite proximity, voice chat resulting in thousands of bans. Who could have saw that coming? And Final Fantasy Tactics, Evil East Chronicles review embargo is also up and out, and it's going well. We're going to talk about pretty much all of these. Let's start with Kojima. Kojima Productions hosted the Beyond the Strand live stream, and we caught up on some of the trailers just before recording this podcast. If you're watching the YouTube version of the whole live stream, you probably already saw us do that. Thanks for tuning in, live chat. What's up? OD looks horrifying, creepy,
horrifying.
Masterful, yeah. Tension. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still nothing really in the realm of gameplay. Yeah, I'm a bit of a grump when I don't see gameplay. I'm going to be completely honest, but I got a soft spot for horror, particularly when the horror is well executed, and this is some well executed horror.
Yeah, that's a nice little tension piece when it comes. And certainly if you've played PT or watched PT content in the past, you're like, oh, okay, crying baby, I know what's up here. Yeah, so everyone prepare your sinks.
I have never played PT. Should I buy a PlayStation off eBay that has PT installed?
See if you can dig up.
Do you have PT installed on one of your old PlayStations?
No, not a Wii. God, Kristen played it. Wait, maybe?
Can you
do we?
Is there any way to get PT like easily?
Well, no. It's kind of the storyline.
Jesse has it on his PS4? Oh shit.
Interesting.
Oh yeah, shit.
I might
just find a YouTube bot. No, God, no, Jesus, that is sacrilege. Watch a horror game.
I think it's still a decent experience to watch. I think you would get the gist pretty well.
No, I'm offended. That is offensive to me and my religion. And my religion is scaring the shit out of myself.
It was straight up terrifying. I was very scared.
There's no re-release. Okay.
Yep. I was very scared watching it. This looks fun. I like the cast. Worm Man and It Girl doing great out there. You don't know who Worm Man is yet, but we'll find out later.
How much is a flight to LA these days?
How much? What are you gonna?
Just go find Jesse.
Get him to show you. And
just I'll leave you with a little something in October before. Hey, Katie. Yeah, we're gonna stop in LA for a day before we continue on to Japan.
I mean, you know, at least it's the right direction.
We're going from Atlanta straight to Tokyo. So it's this insane diagonal flight path, like kind of over the top of the earth. Not quite at the top, but yeah. Anyway.
We got face symbolism, candles. What an interesting artistic piece. Love the eyeball shit going on throughout the whole trailer.
It looks extremely high fidelity. I didn't see an in-engine disclaimer at the beginning, so I don't know if it actually is an engine or not.
No, there was a bunch of omitted, including blurred out text in the actual game itself. So
yeah, they redacted their own damn teaser.
Yeah, they made sure they didn't have spoilers in their trailer, and then they drew a nice picture of some abs below that. Well done.
According to Google, that trailer was an engine. Okay. Okay, that is nuts looking. Absolutely nuts looking. It looks like it's made in Unreal, and the people are restless about how Unreal has been performing on modern day PCs. Kyle,
is Unreal the current one for the Borderlands? Is that
yes.
in the Unreal?
Yes, okay. It is. Which is admittedly. Bit of a Borderlands hater. More admittedly, haven't played Borderlands 4. That game looks like every Borderlands I've ever looked at. That does not look like a visually, like, pushing the boundaries of what game visuals are capable of. So why it's having trouble running on modern PCs is beyond me. It definitely endears me to the camp of, hey, maybe Unreal needs to work on optimizing a little better. But then you got shit like Monster Hunter. They're not using Unreal, and they're having trouble too. So,
got an update on the Death Stranding movie, but some of this shit, man, like, oh, wait, partnering with the Mitsubishi Financial Group for a credit card. So thank you.
That was the funniest. That made me laugh so hard. I was catching up on this morning with my coffee. I saved the trailers so that I'd have a genuine reaction when we watched them before the show. But I sipping my coffee and I see Kojima credit card, and I'm just, you gotta be kidding me. That's the most Kojima shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, you know, he just wants a finger in all the pies. Can you blame him at the end of the day?
He does. They apparently also have an AR project with Niantic. That's the Pokemon Go company.
Okay.
We'll see. I like Pokemon Go enough. A lot of people seem to forget that they also just tried to capitalize on their own success and made a Harry Potter Pokemon Go that was a massive flop.
Did that happen?
Yes.
I don't remember hearing about that.
Yes. I'm always a little trepidatious, but Kojima being at all involved at least makes me perk up and go, okay, maybe you can find a weird, brave new direction to take an AR game. They did a Witcher and a Monster Hunter. Wow. Okay. So they did even more things that I was unaware of. What the hell would you do for a Witcher game? I guess finding monsters.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, maybe find footprints and eventually find a monster or something.
I love The Witcher, but...
Yeah, it seems kind of small potatoes for putting that much effort into it.
It doesn't seem as popularly zeitgeisty as Pokemon to try and, you know, get people to install a phone app for.
Well, you also have the barrier of entry of, you know, playing The Witcher, which that's kind of high fantasy, you know? That's just...
I don't see that as much of a barrier these days. I know you're a tortured D&D fan, but the rest of us are like, yeah, fantasy's pretty freaking popular these days.
Yeah, no, I've seen the number on, you know, the main live play still going around.
It's pretty high fantasies.
It's still cooking.
Says the man who has single-handedly lived through his tortured past becoming the most popular damn thing on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, I went the other way. I got made fun of Star Wars, and then I got to I got to grow up in a world where Star Wars continually turned its own fans against it.
Celebrating 10 years of Kojima.
That's the part of this that like kind of shocked me. Like, I cannot believe it's been 10 years since the Kojima Konami fallout. That still feels new to me.
I mean, I guess Death Stranding is like 6 years old.
Yeah, when was Death Stranding 1? Death Stranding 1.
2019.
Yeah, that was 6 years ago, my dude. 6 years ago.
I remember watching Future Man play it while I was on the floor with my newborn, my first kiddo.
My God. He's six now? I thought he was five.
No, he's six.
Oh, my God. Wow, okay. That
was the birthday I had to go to when in the Exhibition 33, and I had to run.
I guess I don't have to apologize. He's not my child. But
you also gave him an awesome gift. Garrett gives excellent gifts.
Was it good? I was actually stumped this year because you told me, and I love it because Kyle will actually give me a tip if I ask, and everyone else in my life who has kids, I love you all. You're useless. You give me no ideas for your children. Kyle will give me very specific, like the type of tip I would want because I remember being a kid getting the shit I didn't want growing up. And I don't want to be that adult in your kids' lives. So you were like, he's really into those, like the whatever the latest Transformer thing is, which is Cyber World?
Yep, Cyber World is the Cyber new Transformers World. Line.
Hey, Cyber World, I got a bone to pick. Your toys are tiny and dinky. They don't make an impressive gift.
Well, you did the right thing, though. You gave him Megatron from the new set, which he didn't have.
I asked what he already had. You said I only got him the Grimlock. To my chagrin, Grimlock was the only reasonably sized Transformer that would have actually looked like an impressive gift.
But Megatron can ride inside the Grimlock.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's sick.
So you hooked him up there, and then you were like, I don't know, this is too small of a toy. So you gave us a gift card. He got Minecraft with that, man.
Hell yeah. Katie and I had a long talk about it because we weren't sure. I was like, we got to get something more than this. Maybe we get him another Transformer. And I was like, Katie, really serious question. Because like, I take gift giving for kids like really serious. Like, I want to be the cool adult in the people that can stand me being around their children's lives. And so I was just like, I know a lot of adults are like, oh, gift card. You didn't put any thought in this. When I was a kid, I was losing my shit when I got a gift card because there was nothing worse than when you were a kid going to the store and being like, no, you don't have your own money. You're not buying this. But if I had a gift card, it was like, I've got the gift card. As long as it's under that amount, I can get it, baby. I loved that stuff. I got so excited about getting gift cards when I was a kid.
I can say as a parent, it is unnerving when the collection of gift cards kind of gets pushed together. And it lost its gift meaning anymore. Like that, like there's that whole, like, you should write a thank you letter for getting a gift. And when the gift cards become a conglomeration of Best Buy, which is what I grew up with, it was no longer from grandma. It was from this nebulous force of your birthday. And so your parents would be like, aren't you happy grandma got you that? You'd be like, grandma didn't give me that. This is like four gift cards.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see that. But yeah, anyway, we were talking about it. And she's like, yeah, I was always really excited when I got gift cards too. I'm like, okay, all right, we'll do both. Let's do both. That's fine. So anyway, cool. I'm glad it was a hit.
Oh yeah.
Glad it was a hit. And I'm glad that thinking about Kojima not being with Konami for 10 years makes me feel old. I'm glad that that happened. It's wonderful. It's great. He also showed art for his barely announced espionage game. So a little bit ago, I don't remember exactly when, but Kojima let slip that he is, in fact, working on an action espionage game, which is, of course, what he's most famous for, because everyone loves Metal Gear Solid, and he is legally not allowed to make Metal Gear Solid.
So this is Pheasant? Psychic?
I already forget how it's pronounced. But yeah, that is some serious MGS-ass art. For the audio-only listeners, I would recommend just giving it a quick Google. They showed a poster basically for it. But it really invokes that like MGS2, MGS3 era of a massive portion of the artwork just being like stark white and then like leading way to like some brush strokes or some ink effects to the actual illustration of Snake doing Snake stuff. But in this case, you know, it's, I don't know, a faceless dude with a gun doing some, getting up to some espionage.
With the words, "Here comes the feeling."
That's it. That dude, that is the most Kojima shit. Like, it's great. You know, it's perfect. It's so on brand.
I've been reading some fantasy books, enjoying myself. Sometimes things are called just really dumb shit, and you're like, you know what? Let's roll with it. I'm just happy you made the product at the end of the day. The feeling could be one of the greatest psychological villains of our time.
The feeling? Oh.
Here comes the feeling, you know? It's not Diablo. It's not Mephisto. The feeling, you know? The feeling.
That's the there's this thing with like I was exposed to Kojima right around the same time that I was like getting into anime for the first time, and I think a lot of us that are our age went through this experience that we now look back on probably with some embarrassment, where you're just like, I like media that comes out of Japan because it's weird in a cool way. And I remember learning about, there's like a Japanese practice of decorating things with just English, which is like where a lot of humorous memes from the past of poor English on Japanese products come from.
And all that thing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Kizari something. I forget. But it's just a real thing. And I remember back in the day thinking it was amusing that sometimes I would like see like covers or promotional images for Kojima games. And I'd have that kind of reaction of like, is it just word soup because of that practice? And then you play the game and you're like, nope, in the context of the game, this is not decorative at all. It makes complete sense. It was 100% on topic. And I feel terrible forever thinking otherwise. So yeah, that's, I didn't even realize it said, here comes the feeling, Kyle.
Here comes the feeling. It's great. Feeling it. Is he wearing a suit or an ascot? I don't know. Does he have a robot arm? Sure, maybe.
It's like a half tactical poncho. Have I talked to you about how much I love tactical ponchos? Are you aware of
like
this
Master
fact
Chief
of me?
Wears over his spacesuit and that kind
that,
of thing?
I mean, that is technically... That's more like your... That to me comes from Westerns, where like your American gunslinger hero gets his poncho from the local, you know, Mexican tavern. Mecha with drapery is different. I just love a tactical poncho. They're in Star Wars a lot.
Is it different than a duster?
Yes, a poncho is a poncho, a duster is a duster, and a trench coat is a trench coat. A trench coat is more duster. A duster is really the marriage of a poncho and a trench coat. Now that I think about it, does the boss wears a poncho?
Oh, a tactical poncho is like bug out bag adjacent, like out in the woods. It's not a ghillie suit, but yeah.
No, it's just
it's a
poncho.
Ghillie suit without the leaves.
But yeah, you seen like Rogue One, one of her main costumes when they're out in the rain. She's wearing a poncho, and it's the most Star Wars ass looking poncho you've ever seen in your life. So tactical usually just means it's tactical. So usually there's like extra zippers or pockets, places to keep shit. But I just think they're cool. Oh yeah, the boss at the beginning of, I think it's MGS2, and he's smoking the cigar and he's walking on the rainy bridge. He's wearing a poncho. I love that shit. So yeah. Although it also looks like it can be a poncho or a trench coat.
He's swimming in it. Oh, yeah, that's consuming him.
Yeah. No, I love that
freaking
shit.
Freaking huge.
Love it. Rain is great. More rain in our moody fiction, please. No, that's a different guy.
That's a different guy. Is that not a tactical poncho? It's huge, but it does kind of look
that's,
like.
That's a bit different. I believe that's a bomb suit.
I appreciate his need for the straw in order to make sure he can reach his mouth.
Well, you know, you need to. Wine is important, Kyle.
You got to get in there after important. All.
Yeah, that's not who we're talking about. That is not, that is a bomb suit. That is 100% a bomb suit. Anyway. Oh, God. After, hey, Kyle, when we're 72 years old and we've finished playing all the Final Fantasies, we should play every Metal Gear Solid.
Sure. Yeah, but why not? Yeah, Resident Evil, you know, we'll do them all. We just won't do every Monster Hunter.
Every month. No.
I think it is. I think it would behoove us to make sure the levels don't go on forever, whatever we play. Mm. There has to be an end point to the levels.
I mean, you would eventually run out of things to do.
You'd eventually run out of. Yes. Yes.
But yeah.
But let, you know, surmountable things.
And then we had the Capcom online program Tokyo at TGS at the Tokyo Game Show. You saw Onimusha.
I did, yes, and continued to be worried about its existence slightly. It's
doing nothing for me is my review, and I won't go any deeper than that because you can just watch me, you can watch us watch the trailer. And I was just like, I went in grumpy and I came out, I'm like, yeah, it's still just not, doesn't look like it's for me.
There's so much I love about it. It's such a mixed bag. I love the performances. I like what I'm seeing. I like the demons, but the gameplay just doesn't look spooky.
Yeah, I don't know. They showed more of Pragmata, which is a game I think looks fun. I'm a little worried the environments look a little flat, but the gameplay looks fun. And
it did.
That seems to be what they're leading with the game. So I think they're heading in the right direction.
Is it a full price game?
Are you asking if it's a premium game for premium gamers?
Yes, I'm asking that because I mean no shade by this. But this looks like a game that would totally rock on and off for about $25.
Oh, like, it ain't going to be that cheap.
It does one thing, and sometimes you're just in the mood for that one thing, and I could play this.
Pricing but, unavailable. Now, we don't know how much it's going to cost.
It's far too high fidelity. But I like us putting more puzzles in the shooters. I like where we're going with all this. I like that we are expanding our understanding of what can be done inside even a shooting game. I feel like we're slowly escaping the actionification of all story games.
Actionification?
Yeah, like when, you know, you used to have 10 abilities and then it became 6 and then it became 4 and the camera zoomed out more and your tactical game got a real-time dodge roll in it. Like, slowly, a lot of RPGs became more and more that kind of thing. And when we had Doom Remake, we started to put back in more puzzle solving and less just shooting the cool guns. I like where we're going with it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the success of shit like Baldur's Gate 3 has proven the patience level of the average gamer. We're happy for systems deep combat experiences. We're totally fine with it, and this one's like, fun.
Yeah, we like sinking our teeth in.
I like both. I like both. Both is good. I like a simple game with simple mechanics. You know, I don't want this hacking mini game in my Resident Evil game. Don't give me that. Like, I like RE4. I mean, just give me a weak spot to shoot so they stagger, and so I can run up with my knife. Like, that's a simplicity,
you know, I do really like,
and a balance between my gameplay that I really enjoy, but I also like, you know, something more tactical.
It's complete graphics prawn, but I do love the shadow puzzles where you have like the object that you
shadow
have to
shadow puzzles.
Yeah, like, so you'll have so like the shape on the wall will be a square and you have an X before you.
Oh, and you like have to turn object. The 3D object and, to make the shadow
turn
puppet
the 3D
correct.
Object, yeah, oh, sideways. Dude. Now the X is a
how is that square. Graphics, Prawn? I think those are kind of corny.
It's like, hey, you know, there's a light over there, the light there. How does it work? Does this old, you know, farmhouse have light sensors in it? No, but you do.
That's not graphics, Prawn. That's just suspension of disbelief. That's like every trap in Indiana Jones. It's like, how does this actually work? Like, people that would have made this in the time it was made wouldn't have had this type of technology. Don't think about it. Just don't think about it. It's cool.
I think I'm kind of getting over the, you can turn over the card. Like when you pick up an object, you can like rotate it in your hand. And there's sometimes like a password on the back page or something.
I mean, it's not going to get me to buy the game, but I still like that. It's not overdone, I guess. Like, just, you know, I need a break from something. Like, sometimes a mechanic is perfectly fine. It just gets implemented into too many games back to back. And it kind of runs its course. But sometimes you just have a long enough break from a certain type of mechanic and you're totally stoked to go back to it. So, but I think Brick Metal looks good. I want to play it. I'm not as, I don't know. I don't think about price. I don't usually think about price until it's actually time to buy the damn game. And then I sit down and go, am I going to play it immediately? And if the answer is anything other than yes, I will just wait. Or if the game is from Nintendo and I go, this will never cost less than it does now, so I might as well enjoy it as a new game.
They got you there.
Those bastards.
Big tactic. Never lower your price.
Yeah.
And then Monster Hunter Wilds.
Yeah, we got Monster. We already knew about Monster Hunter Wilds doing a big Final Fantasy 14 crossover. What we didn't know was that they were going to really just aim for my throat by letting me get an entire Shadowbringers Dark Knight armor set. Complete with sword.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good.
It does look really good. I will not be playing this day one. I am nowhere near ready to return to Monster Hunter Wilds. It looks super cool though.
It's just an ecosystem thing at that point. You know, no shade at Monster Hunter Wilds. All my friends aren't playing Monster Hunter Wilds, so I'm not playing it, so it didn't happen naturally. But I thought it was a perfectly fun game, and this looks like a fun crossover.
I really enjoyed my time with it. Yeah. But I didn't push far enough in the end game to, I think, even be ready for the level of content that this is going to be. I'm also pretty sheepish after we tried the last Final Fantasy crossover in Monster Hunter World. We spent a whole stream on that thing, and we didn't beat it. Like,
no, it was hard.
It's like, okay, this is try-hard content for try-hard gamers, you know? So... But it's also a premium game for premium gaming because it's expensive and it runs like shit on your computer. So, you know. It's a wonderful Borderlands sequel.
Excellent. Next up.
Sometimes I'm like certain something will make you laugh and it doesn't. And I'm just like, shit, I don't know where to go from here.
I don't actually know much about the whole Pitchford thing. I'm sorry. I don't really.
He's just the most hated man in video games. Like, that's all. He's just a consistent jackass who says the absolute worst thing at the perfectly incorrect time.
Yeah, I missed the last boat, and everyone already hated him by the time he showed his face this next time. So I believe you. You know, you go for it. Split Fiction got an award from the Prince of Sweden.
God bless him. This is probably gonna slot in as my second favorite game of the year, right underneath Expedition 33.
Oh, there's no way Split Fiction's beating Blueprints for me, but you know we're among giants here. I'm not too worried.
I do like Blueprints. I do like Blueprints.
That's just these are good games. Good games all around. It's been a great year for video games, and I just love about, like, you know, the French government being like, good job on that tax revenue there, Expedition 33. Like, there's something about video games getting more mainstream. This is the kind of like mainstream that I love. You want to hear?
Yeah, man. I like it's weird because I don't think I'll ever outgrow a certain degree of F the system, but I just saw MCR and they were just given the key to the city for the town that they are from in New Jersey. And I was just so proud of them, but
yeah, man,
at any other point you asked me to care about who's currently running for mayor. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about politics. I just don't. I don't want to think about it. I do my civic duty, y'all. But it's not something I want to engage with on a public stage. I just find it exhausting. But at a certain point, you're just like, your kings and queens are made up bullshit. But yeah, hell yeah, you go.
Get yourself a giant, what is this, like a Runtz or something? Like, the award looks like it's made of candy, but hell yeah.
That's exactly what I would think an award from a Swedish prince would look like.
It looks very wholesome and handmade. And I'm happy to see video games being celebrated when constantly the news is stuff like video games blamed for this or being too violent or many of the other things that actually happen inside video games. Particularly coming from a live service world, it's just nice to see.
Well, there's a lot of that happening in the United States, which just firmly convinces me that we are actually back in 1998. So, yeah.
I like it. Get your flowers, as they say, as Garrett taught me to say, I should say.
Get their yes. We'll catch you up on lingo that was big 2 years ago. Yet, Kyle. So
I'll get there. Hey, dude, my 6 year old came home 2 days ago and just started dabbing. So you know it's still cool with the kids.
Yeah. Also, I didn't put it in the notes, but our Discord informed me last night, and while we're talking about games that got their flowers, that Expedition 33 won an award at the Japan Game Awards.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it got the Breakthrough Award. And I saw a lot of folks in there talking about how it doesn't look like too many non-Japanese games have won Japan Game Awards. So,
that's cool.
That's very really cool. Freaking cool for them. And I know there was an official statement from the Expedition 33 team on their social media, basically just saying, like, this means a lot. Like, this game wouldn't exist without all the Japanese RPGs that we played growing up.
Well, speaking of the actionification of RPGs, that's a Final Fantasy 16 is a prime example of that. And I'm really excited for the future that not only Baldur's Gate issues in, but Expedition 33 might lead to.
Yeah, man. I like anything else. It's like, okay, now just don't overdo it to a certain degree.
I don't think you can.
Let bit of a side conversation to going through these news stories, but it's been in my head ever since we started playing Expedition 33, because the second we started playing Expedition 33 and you and I both reacted positively to its gameplay, I saw a lot of comments that were like, yeah, the gameplay is great, but also I don't think this is what Final Fantasy should be. And I somewhat agree with that, but I'm like, I don't know. I think I would have liked FF16 more if this is how its combat was.
It would have matched in really well. I mean, ultimately, it asks a lot of you. Whether we're talking just pure hours to beat it with knowledge and a cool build, or parry-only systems. And that kind of game requires an enriching, rewarding story. So you could overdo it, but the chance of that many games having a enjoyable enough story to make me play a 50-hour game like that, pretty low. There's a reason why we go off about software or FromSoft games in the Dark Souls community. It's because it's a trusted brand. Because we know we're going to have to work our asses off to beat this thing. So I'm more of the opinion, like, just apply it to everything and just steal this combat, put it on everything, and then we'll decide if it's a good enough story to make me put in the work in the first place.
Personally, I'm just very excited for their next game. Like, whatever comes after Expedition 33 is a day one buy now. Like, with the coming and swinging, let's go. Like, short of, like, the unthinkable, they would have to come out and announce, we are intentionally making the worst game ever to prove as a social experiment that you can rest on your laurels after a hit. Then I would probably skip it. But anything short of that,
right? When they
they make next, I'm buying.
They could also just play it safe and be like, side story game, side story game, side story collection of the games. Do it like four times. Sell that as a single game down the road. I'm not even talking DLCs, just other stories in that world. And, print some money for a pretty long length of time.
Yeah. What if I told you, Terakai, that you don't have to parry? What if I told you?
Yeah, you don't. Even on expert, you could get by without.
Yeah, there's definitely some like serious parry hate going on right now. And like, I totally understand just like not liking something. But that game gives you plenty of other options.
Yeah, maybe it's the amount you have to work to avoid it mechanically or in menus, which, you know, I get not wanting to turn things
down. It's legitimately the hardest thing to pull off, so I feel like you don't have to work very hard to avoid it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's also bragging.
Kevin B in chat says, just dodge the parry hate.
It's also just, yeah, it's bragging. Like, at the end of the day, a lot of cool factoids are actually just humble brags.
Yeah.
So you discerning those without outside information. But we don't need to help Expedition 33 sell copies. They're doing just fine.
Nah.
Silent Hill F reviews are out, and they're scarily good.
They're pretty freaking good. Yeah.
They're really good.
I didn't grow up playing.
Wrong.
I didn't grow up playing Silent Hill, but I grew up with Silent Hill fans, and that means I've grown up watching the light leave my friend's eyes. Because I really don't think I can think of a gaming fan base that seems to have been more consistently let down than Silent Hill fans. Like, maybe Kojima fans. But they got, like if Kojima leaving Konami and never being able to make another Metal Gear Solid is, like, the most devastating thing that ever happened to you, you still got more quality Metal Gear Solid games than Silent Hill fans got quality Silent Hill games.
Sonic fans?
Sonic fans, they are the self-flagellators of the game fandom. They are into punishment. They know exactly what they're getting themselves into, and they keep putting themselves in that position over and over again.
Also, the Sonic game that you think might be good looking out ahead, you're going to have like 4 games by the time that game even comes out. So sometimes you can replace quality with quantity and be fine. Silent Hill games you can always see coming from a mile away, and you, as a fan, believe you understand the world better than the creators. And that makes every single one the toughest sell in the world. And we're usually right. Of the bad reviews I've read about this thing, because I am considering day one purchase because I love Silent Hill, the only ones that really give it a bad rundown complain about combat, and then the people who love it say, I wish the combat was worse, essentially. Like, I'm too effective.
I've seen that sentiment a lot of places. It seems like there's a lot of Silent Hill fans out there that appreciate jank combat.
Kind of the horror aspect is you're just a dude with a pipe. You don't have training. You know, you get a gun, it's got a kick, you suck with it. That's, you're just a person.
Yeah. Yeah. So can we claim it's back? Because I know that the 2 remake did really freaking well.
Yeah, the 2 did do really well.
I need to play that.
Let's see here. It's solid. It's solid. I haven't picked up the new Bloober, is that the team names? I haven't picked up their new game either.
Bloober team?
Yeah. Which reviewed pretty well, the old Kronos. It did all right. It just came out in a tough crowd with Silksong and everything else around it.
Yeah.
Who makes this thing? Who's making this one? Googling.
I didn't look it up before the show either. I kind of forgot. Gotten that its release was imminent, probably because most people have already played and or beaten it because of early access. This is
Neobards Entertainment.
I am wildly unfamiliar with them.
They made a costume for Resident Evil Resistance.
They have only been around since 2017, so okay, that makes me feel better about being like, yeah, I'm not familiar with them.
Huh. Okay. Well, you know, fresh blood.
Oh, they did. They did a Devil May Cry HD collection, and they worked on some ports. Okay, so they're pretty fresh. This seems to, at least looking at their rundown here, this seems to be their first like big release.
So this might be their, you know, they might have that time to shine kind of.
Yeah.
Well, hunger on them.
That's sick. Yeah, I'm completely honest. Like, just 3 years of watching my Silent Hill friends just kind of become dejected. I haven't paid much attention to Silent Hill over the years. And the big reason why I didn't jump on 2. That and the dude's hair looked a little too much like a boy band character to me. But apparently it's good. And I've always liked the vibes of Silent Hill. And, Kyle says it's back, everybody. The take from this is Kyle says Silent Hill
apparently
is back. And
yeah,
I should play Silent Hill.
I will be cautiously optimistic for a time here, and I hope it works out.
Yeah.
big Fatal Frame vibes from this thing, and I want it to succeed.
It's good stuff. I didn't hear about this. You sent this my way. Xbox console prices are going up, which shouldn't be that surprising because everything is going up.
Now they're going up about $50 across the board here. Looks like the Series S will move up only $20. So that's like the smaller version of the Xbox.
That is the less powerful version of the Xbox.
Yeah, so not an extreme jump, but definitely shows all the price hikes that have been going on. And they've already had ones in the past.
Yeah. Microsoft blames price hikes on changes in the macroeconomic environment. I wonder what they're referencing there, Kyle.
Microsoft also planned to hike the price of their first-party Xbox games to $80 this holiday season, but walked that back in July. So this is their holiday plan.
Mm. It just happened to PlayStation and just happened to every Switch except for the Switch 2. So
this news I'm really excited about. It's a little metaphysical, but Fortnite added a proximity voice chat to one of their game modes recently.
You're excited about people getting banned wantonly for being horrible people?
Yes. I look forward to the publicification. We're just going to come up with publications today of internet spaces. And I'm happy to see that Fortnite is adding a proximity voice chat, because proximity voice chat is freaking badass. First up, I want more games with proximity voice chat. And should a game put it in, I would like them to act like they're in reality and
kick people out of the damn video game being dipshits.
Or just not do it because you're in a public space. And because, you know, you're going to lose your account at the end of the day.
This already happens. I mean, people like get banned all the time and have been getting banned all the time in non-proximity voice chat games like Call of Duty since the peak of Xbox Live culture. But it hasn't really move the needle in your average
and
anonymous internet denizen not being a horrible person.
And I think there is something more personal about proximity voice chat, because that voice is coming from you. You have an area around you that is exposed to your voice. And I want that so badly in MMOs, like for so long. Okay.
So that's not what I thought you were saying. I thought you were heading down the line of like Fortnite's big enough, they're going to have to make this work. But you're going much more philosophical with this, which I don't think I agree with. I love it. It's very optimistic. I think I've either been on the internet too long or too recently in voice chat compared to you to share your optimism.
Yeah, to just roll with the punches. I definitely opt out of voice chat when it pops up in Heroes of the Storm to this day. Why would I?
Yeah, if this wasn't the argument you made, but I would probably agree with you more if you went Fortnite is massive and enjoyed by a lot of kids, and there's a lot of scrutiny in the space because of all the shit going on with Roblox. To keep online environments safe for children. That, you know, if Fortnite commits to this, you know, it might force them to take moderation quite seriously, which is something that would be really nice and something we've been begging, you know, corners of the internet like Twitch and YouTube to do with things like live chat forever. And there's just no progress being made.
Right.
So maybe this is big enough. That's interesting. That's it. But I was like, why does Kyle want to talk about banning jerks?
Because
right, that's an interesting angle,
Absolutely, we can take this. Like, this is just one of those topics that you can run any direction with. The same with like, you have to have a phone number to play a game. Like, there are so many different arguments for that kind of thing. Why don't you just make an account? Well, because you use your real. I don't want to do that in video games. Well, hang on. Well, you know, I'm not going to say things in the game that are going to get me banned, but also I don't want to, you know, scan my license when I start up a multiplayer game so that I can be tied to my face. It's such a complicated issue, but in my heart, man, proximity voice chat is magical, and I want more games to believe in it, and I want to build an eventual internet society where everyone goes, hell yeah! Let's put that in that game. It's going to go just fine.
Have you A weird question. Have you ever played paintball in real life?
No, no.
Oh, we should do that. that's proximity. That's the real proximity voice chat experience right there, my dude.
I played a lot of laser tag.
You're not going to yell with the intensity that you will yell to your teammates in paintball in laser tag, because there's not the threat of the pain of the hit.
But both are still a good calf workout.
That is a true statement that I wasn't arguing.
You got to squat and then you get around.
To me, laser tag is easily third place in the realm of physical shooting games that you can do in real life.
I haven't done it in so many years.
Paintball's first place, airsoft second place. Laser tag is a distant third for me. There's an actual threat in paintball. There's just, even if you get hit somewhere where it does not hurt. Like, you're wearing a thick enough jacket and it hits you like chest area where like you're going to be fine. There is just something about the shock of that sound and feeling the vibration on your body that brings adrenaline with it in a way that laser tag and airsoft doesn't. It's nice. Also, I got shot in the face mask one time while I was yelling to my team, and that it has vents so you can breathe. And the liquid inside the paintball rocketed down my throat at about 70 miles an hour, and I almost threw up on my mask. You know, I'll never forget that experience. I'll never forget that experience. And I may or may not forget the experience of Final Fantasy Tactics. The embargo has dropped on the Final Fantasy Tactics Evil East Chronicles, so reviews are out there. It is also reviewing quite well. Did a little bit of reading. For the most part, seeing what journalists had to say, seems to be a yay in the direction of the quality of life improvements that make this just a more pleasant game to play, and a nay, because I guess there is additional PSP content and PSP versions of this game that are not in the Evil East Chronicles.
This thing has actually a lot of advertising power behind it, too.
It really does. They're pushing the living crap. I mean, dude, just look at our... you can make it as anecdotal as you want. Look at our own damn comments. Anytime we generally talk about playing every Final Fantasy, if we don't explicitly state in a 300-word or more essay that we will play Final Fantasy Tactics, 50 of the comments are, how dare you leave out Final Fantasy Tactics?
Fair.
For a lot of Final Fantasy fans, this is the best Final Fantasy. So, it's beloved.
I do like tactics. I prefer my tactics to autoplay after I've put them in position nowadays, which is just a modern problem. This is something I've become accustomed to in the last few years.
Just say you're old. It's okay.
It's not about being old. It's just the pleasure of watching the dominoes fall.
A little bit, just a little bit.
There's a difference between flicking over every domino or just hitting one and watching it go.
Okay. Yeah, we got folks in chat right now saying favorite game of all time. Cloud, auto chess is boring to you. It might be not boring to other people. That's how opinions work.
That's true. Bring us in to Emma Mosley.
Yes. Hildebrand got us in trouble on YouTube and Blue Sky for sexually explicit visuals.
It's true.
We got a rather stern email from YouTube. Uh-huh. And my Blue Sky tweet was straight up redacted.
That was pretty funny.
For those of you listening who may or may not know about shit going on in Final Fantasy XIV, there is a comedy quest line. There is an entire multi-expansion spanning quest line referred to as Hildebrand or Manderville. Because of the main character's name being Hildebrand Manderville. And it's comedy. There's not a ton of gameplay. It's mostly just there to go on a ridiculous adventure. And it is ridiculous. It is very zany. It has been much requested by folks that watch us and the hijinks we get up to on the internet that also like Final Fantasy 14, and I can see why you and I like doing silly voices. Nothing in Hildebrand is voice acted, so it is a blank slate for us to get up to our usual nonsense. I photoshopped your face onto
a spinning man.
Okay. So, pardon to the audio audience. We are going to, so we don't also get banned again, we're going to show the scene that I made a thumbnail from and
in
not
motion.
The thumbnail itself. You know, we're going to show the scene. And so, yeah, there's a scene where a shirtless, muscular man picks up a man in a tuxedo and spins him around in kind of like a wrestling move. And there's a shot that you're already past where you can see the shirtless man more prominently than the non-shirtless man. And I photoshopped your face onto it, and I made it the thumbnail for the stream. And I just thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And YouTube and Blue Sky apparently thought it was gay sex.
Did you know what you had done?
No! I legitimately did not think of that.
First up, I'm completely flattered that everyone thought it was a Kyle thumbnail. Thank you so much.
Nope, this is all me. This is all me. I clearly am spending too much time with Kyle, but yeah, no, this is all me.
But second of all, like, completely innocent, because I saw that thumbnail and I went, oh, sick, it's that scene where he spun the guy. That's great. That's funny as hell. I'm glad this is a thumbnail. I did not see what clearly YouTube, robots, the algorithm, and the audience saw that day. And I want you to all know that you're disgusting. How dare you?
Yeah.
But you could totally see it when pointed out to you.
Listen, in retrospect, I don't even want to show the thumbnail. But
we're not
because it would really, really drive the point home. In retrospect, looking at the thumbnail, which you can still see on Twitter, Twitter didn't block it.
Yeah, that says something.
Twitter is the place where I do still randomly come across nudity that I was not looking for. So
completely accidental.
But there's a big difference between nudity you're looking for and nudity you're not looking for. So that doesn't surprise me too much. But yeah, Blue Sky called it sexually explicit. YouTube, I didn't know they could do this. YouTube's credit. We've been a little hard on YouTube lately. I'm gonna compliment YouTube. They didn't ban the whole damn stream. They just removed the thumbnail. So they actually decided that just the thumbnail was the objective, or the objectionable material. And even in the wording of the letter that we got, they said, listen, this in their actual own wording, they said, this might be totally fine in the context of what of the actual content itself of what's on your stream. But in the context of the thumbnail, it goes a little too far. And when I first saw it, I was like, this is so freaking stupid. And then I pulled up the thumbnail and I looked at it and I go, nah, they're totally right.
Once you're informed of what others are seeing with his hands folded back behind his head, what appears to be a squatting motion, which is actually a wrestling move, you could see how this was misconstrued.
Yeah, this makes me wonder how many people who maybe upload wrestling content have run afoul of accidentally, maybe erotic.
Perhaps.
Yeah, you know, same sex or otherwise.
No, it was extremely reasonable. All it did was just remove the thumbnail, and they suggested we put a new one. Otherwise, it was going to auto take a scene from the stream itself, which was usually in the first hour, which would have been us just sitting there with limbs in the background.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah. So you heard it here first. Hildebrand Quest, too gay for YouTube.
Apparently, well, certain scenes when taken out of context. That was something.
Yep.
And our audience was on it. But that's all they saw. I'm proud of y'all. You know, let me be real here. You saw that thumbnail come up in your feed and you're like, guys, and both Garrett and I are like, oh yeah, it's a scene. It's just funny. You know, like I'm spinning Hildebrand.
Pretty much like
no problem.
We're making so many thumbnails right now. We're streaming daily because of the Patreon. The amount of thumbnails we need to make is truly ridiculous. So with Hildebrand, I'm just like, I'm just trying to find the funniest pose. That's it. I'm just trying to find a really funny pose to put our faces on. And in my defense, our first damn Hildebrand thumbnail is the same dude in his underpants suplexing the other dude, and I put both our faces on.
Also suplexing a guy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's another suplex coming. That one was fine, I guess. I mean, I guess you can see behind the beyond the shadow of a doubt that they're that at least underwear is on.
Yeah.
In that one. So, sure. Look over at chat. I just see gay icon, Godbert Manderville. Oh, I wish we hadn't just played the quest that confirms he has a wife. Yeah, you'd be, that's great. That would totally work. That would totally work.
That was a completely honest moment.
Exciser says, I'm shocked you're not getting copyright trolled by the obnoxious company that strikes down Rumbleborn all the time. We are. Every single Manderville stream is, in fact, getting copyrighted trolled. Kyle is fighting every single one of them. Most of them, I think, have been cleared at this point. The most recent one is still has a copyright claim on it.
I probably write two of those a week right now, but I've over the last 3 years have learned the wording, how to link to the proper websites, and
our Final Fantasy III marathon still has a copyright claim.
Has it been 30 days?
Don't think so. Close. August 28th.
Okay. Yep. So what happens in most cases is the infringer, or usually a cover artist who is trolling. They can either respond and fight for their claim, or they make it sit there for 30 days hoping you give up first. You know, kind of a Blue Magic player sort of situation.
Jokes on them. We
jokes. I
stream so much. It's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah. No, and that goes into escrow. If for background, it goes into escrow, which basically means like hold the ad revenue. We don't know if it's theirs or yours. We're just going to hold on to it. And then if you get cleared.
And it's just for ad revenue. It does not affect YouTube memberships, and it does not affect Super Chats.
Yeah.
So that's good. And jokes on them. Ad revenue is so shit right now on YouTube. We can wait for that ad revenue.
It's all good.
Ad revenue but, is yeah, terrible that, right now.
So a new thumbnail was made. There were some compliments on that thumbnail as well. So thank you so much for that. Was a Kyle original. Everyone who supported that thumbnail in the making. It was very topical to what happened in the stream itself. So
I wonder if it affects premium. That's a good question. Probably. I think they consider premium ad revenue. They will break it down for you. If you go to look at analytics, it will show you. Because if you watch one of our videos of premium, we do get a small chunk of your premium. And I think it even pays better than if you watch an ad.
It does. It's kind of a Spotify situation. Like the watches equal a certain amount based on the ads that weren't served to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty freaking cool. Again, not sponsored, not an endorsement of YouTube Premium. It's just something we both like. So, yeah. Anyways, let's talk about what we've been playing and what we've been watching, and in your case, what you've been reading. I already pretty much scooped myself on Hollow Knight and being extremely lost. So let's talk about the fact that we have all now died, every single one of us in Hardcore WoW.
We died terribly. I died first in Hardcore WoW, and the dominoes valiantly and sacrificially fell from there.
Honorably. Kyle died again by complete accident. And for the lols, we decided to try and finish on Number Gone without you, which there was just no way in hell that was going to happen.
There's absolutely
no way it was going to happen.
I saw some comments, the effect of, that's the exact mob I would have expected killed you in there.
Yep. I forgot about the flamethrower, going to be completely honest, because if I had, I would have been like, let's do this in reverse. I'll take the asshole with the flamethrower and you can side tank the rest.
You had the big pile of mobs. I had a big flamethrower guy. I grabbed him real quick, and I thought it was a pretty classy move. In hindsight, didn't really work out, but
we didn't plan it ahead of time. So
yeah, in the moment of engagement, turning into a bear there and helping out seemed like the right call.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna miss him. I have lost so much gold on my hardcore server in the last 2 weeks.
I'm sad to see him go. I really enjoyed the ambulance, the cat druid hybrid support man.
If you ever want to just scratch the hardcore itch at any point, it takes no convincing for me. I love playing hardcore well. So
there was
if you want to like, tickle a hardcore horde fancy, you just say when.
Oh, I'm thoroughly tickled. I'm tickled out. You know, I am ready for that. That was a pretty big loss, but also an extremely rewarding journey. I enjoyed it immensely. There was, you know, people in kind of the moment of death of like being like, see, that's why I would never play this. And it's like, when you play D&D with your friends and the group falls apart and you never defeat the final bad guy, was that time wasted? Like, no, it was meaningful. Yeah,
I completely understand that mindset, though. I have played much more WoW without permadeath than I have with. And in at the launch of the game, if it was permadeath or nothing, I probably would have never picked that game up. So I totally get it. Totally get it. So I think we all died around level 28 in Nomergon, because we continued on to the level 33 elites, which would have been hitting us with crushing blows.
Yep. Yeah. There's a good chance we all would have died to that final boss too in that old dungeon. Looks like he was also.
I don't think we would have made it past the dwarves that we did eventually. That's what killed the rest of us when we tried to continue on as a foreman. I don't think we would have made it through the dwarves.
I think I got two empowering lasers on this guy. I went through the math and he was resisting most of my debuffs. I got a crit heal on my potion I chugged. Like, I walked away very satisfied that I had done close to all I could in these final moments.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, like, this is not how you should play hardcore. if this is the only hardcore content you have seen, this is a show. Like, we're here with our friends, you know, and this was a challenge we took on together. And we've been joking the whole time that if one of us dies, we're just going to go for it for the lulz. In real life, one of you dies, you're just like, well, that was crazy, man. And you leave the dungeon and you do not continue. Or actually, in real life, you turn the corner, you see level 30 elites when you're like 27, 28, and you go, guys, I think we're not high enough. We should probably come back later.
I like what Blitz says here. For me, hardcore play usually comes down to, was the death fair? And if it feels like no more than often yes, I won't enjoy it. Yeah, this was a completely fair death. And it was much better than a random enemy kited my way, something spawning on top of me, an elite I didn't see. It was extremely rewarding. I will miss an ambulance, but I'm happy for his journey to be complete.
Yeah, it was really fun, really special. One of my favorite things we did this year. I love it. I want to hang out more with that whole crew. Joe, Cena, Girl DM are so freaking fun. It's the most fun I had. I think it's some of my worst performance. I just forgot to talk for hours at a time because everyone was just so much fun to listen to.
It was chill. Yeah, no, with that many voices in the room too, it can be hard to give way without a turn order.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Have you played anything else besides hardcore, or is that kind of it?
No, I'm playing
Expedition 33.
Expedition 33 for about 2 hours before he'd stream to spec and handle inventory kind of concerns.
I brute forced my first boss in Expedition 33 on my solo save.
Oh, one of the bonus ones? Nice.
I went to a side boss because there's an overworld in Expedition 33 if you're not playing it. Out where we fought that big boss in the water that instantly owned us, there's another little island a little further out to the west that you and I did not find. And there's a night where Katie was like, oh, I want to continue tonight. And then she went to go shower. I'm like, cool, I'm going to jump on early and get a bunch of side shit done. Because the characters I have with you are so much more leveled up, geared, specced correctly. I'm way behind in my solo save because we're mostly, whoa, what was that?
Oh, that only played for you because we still have that stream going. Let me close that.
Oh, well, it also plays for the audio podcast then.
Oh, sorry about that, everybody. That was me preparing Dan to Dan for the next conversation.
Oh, my word. Jump scare. Anyway, yeah. So there's a purple gestural optional boss just out in the overworld. Hits like an absolute truck for the level that I am in my solo save. And I just sat there for 30 minutes learning the parry timing. And I just brute forced that sucker.
Yep. Sometimes in your own personal home, it could be a lot of fun to take that on. No, I was going to finish Mistborn book two. It's a trilogy, Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson. Did I say that name correctly? Sanderson. We'll just go with that. Delightful. It just sucks. It sucks so much talking publicly about books because it's like, hey, you got 100 hours. Cool. Anything could be a spoiler for a 100-hour journey. But it was a delight. I had an amazing time with it. And I look forward to getting to Way of Kings after book three. So all my spare time right now is going into just powering through the Mistborn trilogy. But I did finish Dan to Dan season two.
Oh, I wish you had warned me. I would have jumped on that. So did you not finish about it? No, I haven't finished it.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. And then I didn't realize. No, I finished Evangelion. Which we're going to talk about on Friday.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that Friday.
Man, we are so strapped for time, but I want to talk to you. Oh, I want to do a spoiler talk about Dan to Dan with you.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know. Just let me know. We'll make it a thing.
Say when? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, say when.
Okay.
We'll do it.
All right.
We'll talk about Dan to Dan.
Yeah, because I really like Dan to Dan. I'm fine knowing this. Does it have a satisfying ending or does it stop in the middle of a goddamn scene and I'm going to have to be angry for a year?
It does not end in the middle of a scene, no.
Oh, thank God. Okay, awesome. I'm excited.
But it is 500% ongoing.
That's fine. That's totally fine. No, yeah. It literally stopping season one in the middle of a scene was sinful. It's just the worst.
There's a little bit of a wait. Otherwise, I've been watching King of the Hill on Hulu because they have the new season out.
Oh, King of the Hill's great, man. Oh, you're watching the new season?
Yeah.
How is it?
It's pretty good, dude.
King of the Hill has so much heart, man. Like, that is such a wholesome show.
Let me do something completely out of left field for you. But I know a lot of people have tried to sell you on JoJo Bizarre Adventure for a long time.
I'm totally into watching JoJo, by the way. It is really just a time thing, and it's like I am interested in watching it. I'm just not as interested as other things that are higher in the queue.
King of the Hill is a JoJo Bizarre Adventure.
Oh my God.
And
okay.
It satisfies the exact same need that you have.
Okay.
There is an asshole, and eventually they get told off in a funny way. That's King of the Hill. And that's what's so satisfying is he'll get in these scenarios where he looks like he's a bad person. He looks like he's a simpleton. But in the end, he's just, no, I just hated the way you cooked the meat. You know, like that joy of seeing him constantly pushed into corners. And then it's actually just because he was an amazing person on the other side. Loved it. And the new season, It held on to the heart.
It's more. How is Bobby being an adult? Because that's what seems
it's
the most
solid.
That seems the most compelling to me. Because I love Bobby. Is just such a realized kid that at the time I originally watched King of the Hill, I just really never seen a kid written that way.
Yeah. No. Bobby as a child, I wasn't particularly interested in, but I was also very Bobby adjacent, you know.
Same. He's a soft kid.
Yes, he's an extremely soft kid, and he's extremely imaginative and playful,
yeah,
and in touch with his feelings. And so all the scenes about like Hank understanding his son a little more, I was just like, I already do. Moving on to please stop making me see myself. Put down the mirror. I'm done. I don't need this.
I think it's a major difference between you and me. I get more bought in when I see myself in media, and I feel like you recoil, and I wonder why.
I probably a deep psychological reason.
This also might be deeply psychological, but I do feel like on average I dislike myself more than you dislike yourself.
But I also associate myself more with monster characters we meet, and very rarely am I personified as a functional adult. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Okay, all right, maybe.
Like they don't make a lot of movies about me. I'm great side characters, but rarely am I in the driver's seat. At any rate,
listen,
Bobby.
Everybody's favorite character is Jack Sparrow. It's not your fault that the movies got bad when he became the main character.
Yeah, exactly, right? So maybe I don't even want movies about me. At any rate, Bobby being an adult is really solid. It still has a ton of heart. The jokes are crisp and sweet. You get over you get over the animation change very quickly. It's, you know, very much digital nowadays. And there's kind of this moment where you're like, oh, it's like a flash. Oh, everything looks wrong. But they embrace the aging voice, except for King of the Hill. Like, he sounds just like freaking himself.
Hank?
Hank hasn't aged a day.
Well, they were trying to make him sound older.
Yeah, that could be
back
it,
when
right?
they were doing his voice, and now they actually are older. You know, so I think it totally works.
Yeah. No, it's really solid.
Wow, that got real suddenly. Welcome to Grinding Gear. That's what we do here.
you know, fantasy mirrored to real life. Sometimes these things happen.
Yeah. It's what being a functioning adult is all about. Sometimes you got to get introspective, realize your faults, smile in spite of them, and move on.
But if you enjoy the moment where Hank Hill throws down, usually towards the end of each episode during a frustrating situation, and shows what an amazing person he is,
yeah,
that's the joy of JoJo. Watching an extremely annoying person get completely owned the second the music starts playing. Just because they turn French fries into demons on every third Tuesday of the month, and that's their power, doesn't mean it's not very satisfying to watch them get punched in the gut 20 times.
Mm. Speaking of feeling satisfied while someone gets punched in the gut 20 times, I watched The New Superman.
The New Superman.
It's on streaming now, so I missed it for what felt like the 3 days it was in the theaters for.
You watched it on
HBO.
HBO, right?
HBO yeah. owns Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers owns DC. Or Warner Brothers owns HBO and DC. And so all the Warner Brothers shit is on HBO. And so is all the DC stuff. So there you go. There you go, Kyle. There it is. I was surprised how much I liked this.
I don't think it trailers well at all.
I don't think so either. I will say, after having seen it, the trailer's really honest. It is campy as shit. It is just like Superman and all his wacky friends being wacky together. And it's a James Gunn movie, so of course one of his friends is a total asshole. And that's Guy Gardner, which Guy Gardner is an asshole. He is the biggest dick of the Green Lanterns. So it works. it was really good. It was really good. We talked a little bit about it on stream, like just randomly. And I struggle with, I don't like this. I didn't love the Lex Luthor. So it was like, it was not a flawless movie. Katie was like picking my brain because she knows I'm a James Gunn fan. So she was like, all right, what'd you think? I was like, this is a mixed bag because I think it might be the most I've ever liked a Superman movie. But I think it's my least favorite James Gunn superhero movie. I think both things are true. I think it's like my favorite Superman movie. I think I still prefer pretty much any other superhero thing that James Gunn has done. So the internet's broken my brain, man. I rank everything.
He has a bizarre resume.
James Gunn?
Yes. From Scooby-Doo to Slither.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all James Gunn.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Also, if you're familiar with the game Lollipop Chainsaw, that was his game. So what? he also has a game development resume.
He's doing Clayface. There's no way he's going to do it right.
I disagree, because he's done horror, and Clayface should be horror.
Coyote versus Acme? They're making a Coyote movie? Oh, my God.
Are you not aware of that whole thing?
No?
That was finished and canceled for the tax write-off. And it was a big drama.
No, was it?
It's finally coming out. Someone else bought it up and is putting it out.
Oh, because, yeah, I see the poster here. It says unreleased.
It finally ended up somewhere and will be getting a release. But his most relevant stuff to making a Superman movie is he made all three Guardians of the Galaxy's movies, and he made what I think is the good Suicide Squad movie, which is the 2021 one, the one that doesn't have Will Smith in it. And Peacemaker, which is probably my favorite superhero thing right now. I really like Peacemaker. But you haven't watched that. That's a series, not a movie.
Yeah, no, I'm also guilty of just my ears aren't working right now as I read about the $30 million tax loss pull they did. This was 2023, right? Yep, this was 2023. that tracks. 2023. Yeah. 2023, we love doing this shit.
You've heard...
It happened all the time.
I'm sure you've at least tripped and fallen over one of the many stories about people thinking that the CEO of Warner Brothers, David Zaslav, is like a soulless nightmare person.
Right? No, I'm not familiar with that at all.
Oh, okay. But, well, he was behind the shelving of a finished movie for the tax write-off, and it was just...
No,
anyway.
I just remember throughout, like, from 2020 to 2023, there was a bunch of different products. I kept saying, wait, that's the plot of The Producers.
Well, the difference is they actually released The Producers.
They did. They actually, and then it ended up being beloved, and they got in more trouble because they didn't expect to make a decent show in the first place. But
Yeah. So anyway, it's good. I struggle with Superman. You know, I have my comics that I enjoy. I'm a huge Kingdom Come fan because it's like so biblical. And the size of the threat is big enough that it feels like you can just throw Superman at it. But when it comes to movies, it's like, you gotta find something more personal. You gotta find a personal battle for him. And I've just never really cared for any of the live action Superman stuff. I didn't grow up with Christopher Reeve. So by the time I tried to go back to it, I don't think it holds up. Man of Steel. I like Cavill. I liked finally having a buff Superman. That was nice. But, yeah, I just never really cared for it. So I really liked the Superman. I was completely unfamiliar with David Cornsweet, the actor they cast to be Superman. I think he's freaking perfect for the role. He's really good. Amazing chemistry with the actor they got to play Lois Lane. I'm not familiar with Rachel Brosnahan. I'm not familiar with either of these actors.
Wow, he looks remarkably unlike himself with a bit of stubble.
His Clark Kent really worked for me.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put that together either, movie. Well done.
Oh my God, this is kind of weird. This might be one of the first Supermen where I'm like, oh yeah, I don't think I'd pick him out.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there are little things that bothered me, but I was still able to like kind of put it away and enjoy the ride. I'm going to watch it again. I really like this movie. I will watch it more than once, which these days is about as high of a compliment as I can give a superhero movie. It was solid. It's an inherently campy movie. Lex Luthor's really campy, but I prefer my conniving gentleman Lex Luthor. This was like spitting in rage. Lex Luthor, and I didn't really care for it.
That's what I saw. I kind of picked up from the various clips and trailers I've seen is he's very much a more foaming at the mouth CEO type.
Yeah. That's definitely the direction they take it.
Frankly, you got plenty of options to pick one, but a little bit more mastermind in there. LOL.
yeah. I can totally make, like it's a valid take laugh. And you know, Superman, like, dude, it's like Batman to me or the Ninja Turtles. Like, all takes are valid. These are characters that have existed so long. They've been reinterpreted throughout so many different forms that you can go that way. I just have the ones I prefer. Like, I don't take issue with it because I think it's wrong. I just take issue with it because it's like, it's just not what I was looking for. Plus, I like Nicholas Holt, and I think he's capable of more nuance, and there was no nuance in this performance at all. So that was like the biggest irksome thing for me. But other than that, I was like, damn, I like a Superman movie. This is a new feeling for me.
It's a new era.
Yeah. And then we both watched the Mandalorian and Grogu trailer because we're getting a Mandalorian movie that for some reason is titled The Mandalorian and Grogu.
Well, it's what's selling it, you know?
That is the most like not Star Wars title for a Star Wars movie you possibly could have come up with.
You could have named it something more confusing, so why not? It's in theaters. A lot of people just go to the theaters, man, and look at the little list up top and the picture that's about 5x4, you know? There's not...
Yeah, if you're a retiree, is that who they're advertising to?
But a lot of people still do that, man. Like my cousin, like that's his weekend. He goes out, pulls up to the theater, not sure what he's going to watch, sits down for 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I'm confused? It's like, why was Planet of the Apes Planet of the Apes? Like,
not we could have done only people who go to see movies.
The story of Caesar should not have been confined by the limitations of Planet of the Apes. That was a good ass movie. But it sold better because it was a Planet of the Apes film. After watching this, I'm not terribly sold on a need to go see.
I did not think it was a particularly great trailer, and I love The Mandalorian. But yeah, this was this felt like engineered in a lab for TikTok clips, and I did not care for it.
Yeah, you got to see all the cute parts, you know. Which, you know, I love movies like Hercules that has like a nonstop quip a minute, but it felt weird in this environment based on what I loved from original season.
Yeah.
Puppets are great though.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, while we were watching it, it's just like, it doesn't matter what I think, cause I'm going to see the movie anyway. Like, I'm going to go, they'll be there with lightsaber in hand. Let's go. Another Star Wars. Give me my Fell For It Again award. Let's go. So yeah, I was not expecting you to show up and be like, "I watch King of the Hill." Hot damn! I would get into Evangelion, but we are doing a full on spoiler podcast live this Friday. Join us for it. Join us for it. Let's take a question before we wrap this up.
Excellent.
Hello there.
Hello there.
Hello there.
You can drop a message in the Ask the Host channel. That you get access to that if you support us anywhere. Anywhere at all, YouTube, Patreon, Twitch.tv. If you give us a membership, a sub, a patronage, you get access to that members lounge, and the Ask the Host channel is right in there. Drop us a question in there. Crit degree, yes. If you will forgive the Play My JRPG question. Did either of you happen to catch the Dragon Quest 5, 6, 7 reimagined announcement during last week's Direct? Do you have any thoughts on it or the upcoming 1 and 2 remake? Perhaps more broadly, looking at these two games, what's your preferred style of remake, graphically or gameplay wise? Not really. We looked into Dragon Quest 1 briefly, and the existing remake really put us off. The art looked, we both in unison kind of recoiled.
We're talking about 1, where they went in and added an interpretation of the art on top of the original art, and it was not for me. I need to figure out if my computer's chugging or if this has a frame rate on it. I'm watching the trailer right now. No, I think it's just kind of doing an animation thing. It's a little jerky.
Yeah, I don't have a hard and fast rule for how I like remakes to be interpreted or reinterpreted visually speaking. I like whoever's working on it to be passionate, and I want that passionate to shine through. Like that's really all I want. I will say, after playing Pixel Remasters, that I would probably be more instantly interested if they were just like, hey, we took 1 and 2 and we made it look fully 16-bit. That'd be cool. But I like 2.5D. I guess this is just fully 3D with a nice like a locked camera, but it's still got that old school charm. So yeah, this is the 1 and 2 HD 2D remake is the official title of the upcoming one. This is right around the corner. This comes out right before
Halloween.
This
is a different remake of.
It's not the one you and I looked into when we were like, should we just like shotgun Dragon Quest 1 real fast, like as fast as we can, just to get the experience? And then there's some other like half step remake where they tried to like draw the pixel art, and it's just. Then I don't care for it.
Oh, this is kind of cute the way they sort of it reminds me a lot of the Zelda game they made.
This is full. This is proper like 2.5D.
Yeah. And what was Zelda's quest? That one where she could summon 3 beds on top of each other.
Oh, we have that. We still haven't played it.
I do like the look of this.
I like the look of this quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like when, yeah, this is a good combination of the various graphics. I'm going to be completely honest here. I had my opinion made for me a long time ago about Dragon Quest, and I never gave it the time of day, and that's on me for absorbing a rather hateful opinion and never looking at it myself.
You want?
I don't know anything.
You want to drag someone for their hateful opinion?
No, it was just like I had a friend and I had a collection of other internet individuals who were very much like, oh, it was during the 10 release. There was a lot of hate being thrown at the game, and many people jumped on board with that, including some people in my friend group. And so I've never given Dragon Quest on a shake. I did the, I think it was on Xbox Live. Went a long time ago. I tried 10 and it was setting up for you are the chosen one, go to the top of the tower and save a princess. And I didn't need any of that right now. Sometimes I'm so into that. Sometimes I'm just like, thank you, please, back to basics. I don't need metaphysical questions. But at the time I was playing Final Fantasy 14, which was getting pretty heady. So I was not in a simple adventure mindset to take it on.
That tracks. These look cool. This does a lot more to endear me to the thought of playing through Dragon Quest 1 than whatever the previous remake was, because it just did not care for how it looked. And I like old games, but that mostly stands for 16-bit. I don't love revisiting a lot of 8-bit games. 16-bit games, I think there's just a lot of them, particularly the good ones, like they just freaking hold up, and I think it's a timeless art style. Revisiting 8-bit so often, I just kind of go, I just wish I was playing the sequel on the next console, because they learned a lot of lessons, added a lot of systems, and the art's better. So I do generally find 8-bit games a lot more difficult to return to, although I did really enjoy Final Fantasy 1 and 2. And 3 wasn't like pulling teeth, but it's definitely my least favorite of the three. So, but that, again, it's like, I really like the pixel remasters because I like that 16-bit look. So, I'll have to look into this. As for the Dragon Quest 6 reimagined, no, I didn't catch any of that.
Well, not on my radar, but I do, I really actually like the look of this one too. So, yeah
it looks really charming.
Switch, I mean, it looks like a really good handheld thing. Is it Switch exclusive though?
We can stream from Switch. That's not too hard.
Now I'm on a different kick where I'm like, was Undertale 8 or 16-bit? But I gave a little Googling here.
Undertale is a modern game, so it's technically neither.
It's a 16-bit inspired game for sound and art aesthetic. But in a technical sense, it is a modern 32-bit game.
Yes. It's a pixel art game. Yeah, I've never played Undertale. That was the one where we learned that Joe-Cat did a playthrough where he intentionally trolled the entire audience.
Yes, he did say that. I keep meaning to look up that VOD because I think it would be hilarious. I would love to watch you play Undertale. I do not know anything about the audience. I need to do some research into what sort of defense I should muster on your behalf. But from sitting here right now, I fully believe that I could poo-poo anybody who tells otherwise. It is a delightful, delightful game.
It sounds horrific, and this is a me thing, y'all. This is not a judgment of the game. I don't like the way it looks. I've looked at it many times, and I was just like, ooh, I don't think I want to stare at this for hours.
I think you get over it real fast. Like, yeah. It is real cute. The second you just get in your first combat, you'll be like, oh, it never mattered in the first place.
Gotcha. Never mattered in the first place. Okay. Well, now I'm intrigued.
It was just a vessel for whatever the hell this is. Let's go.
Okay. Because I've heard Undertale fans, I've heard nothing good about what it's like to play your game publicly.
You know Bioshock, right? Did you beat Bioshock?
Yeah, I beat Bioshock.
Bioshock.
Yeah, like okay, within a week of it originally coming out.
Yeah,
I was there. I was there during the initial zeitgeist of holy shit, this is blowing our minds.
Yeah, I wonder if like Bioshock, clearly not the popping off stream fiesta, but let's say it was one of the most popular games to stream in the world.
Yeah, streaming did not exist at the time, but yes, go ahead.
What would the audience be like if you sacrificed your first dull girl to get more mana.
Insufferable.
Right? Exactly. And I think that's the Undertale threat.
Okay.
Is that it's not that it's presenting necessarily interesting psychological gotcha situations to the streamer. It's just that your ability to get the wrong ending in someone's eyes is decided extremely early in your journey.
Mm. Well, okay. I feel like I already have the answer to this. I've never watched a Mass Effect stream. Are people awful about backseating Mass Effect streams?
I bet they have a lot of opinions on Ashley.
Because you don't choose the right waifu.
I mean, chat brings up a would you kindly hinting would be, it'd be a bit much.
I mean, Welcome to Shadowbringers was constant, never ending, and eventually it became a white noise, like walking outside and forgetting there's cicadas. Like, eventually I stopped paying attention to the Welcome to Shadowbringers. It was fine. You get past that at a certain point.
So I think... Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if that would just happen in Mass Effect because of the party system. If, and I don't know this is a fact, if something like Expedition 33 has a forced sacrifice a party member moment, that would be extremely tragic and hard for an audience because every party member is with you for the entire journey. When it comes to old BioWare games, that's just raw content. And if you're like, I'm doing an Ashley run, you're not a terrible person who agrees with her ethics. You're curious what content there is when you bring Ashley along and to see the journey of that character.
Did we all get a little more... Do we get better about reading comprehension, or are we all just weak for bangs? Because why does everyone accuse you of being a horrible person if you party with Ashley in Mass Effect, but we're all totally fine with Shadowheart?
Well, I do think we're weak for bangs, yes.
Okay.
In general, Y2K fashion is something our generation is very into. You know, whether that's a spiked belt.
That is extremely back right now for the young folk as well. I don't know if you've been to a mall recently, Kyle, but it is wild.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why do the kids look like me when I was a kid?
Anyway. So I think there's an element of it with the bangs and midriffs and all that.
Okay.
But. I can't speak to Shadowheart. I don't know what happens there. I did never beat Act 3.
Is everyone just weak for bangs? Garrett, nobody's Could been to be. A mall recently. You have added yourself as not living in Florida. Florida is still mall country. It was packed the other day. My God.
But yes, there are also like just interesting psychological games that are suggested to streamers to like give them a purity test or, you know, get them in situations where they have to talk themselves out of it.
We ran into that a ton of times in Final Fantasy 14, a game with zero options, no choices to make.
Yep.
They give you the illusion of choice sometimes in dialogue, and then it makes real no discernible difference in the actual overarching story.
So I would have to do serious research, but like playing Undertale Christmas 2018, I think is when I played it. One of my favorite experiences I ever had.
Okay. Everyone hates on Ashley, but we all want Astarion. The internet is bad. And right. What are you saying that Ashley is in the right and Astarion is in the wrong? I think they both have questionable worldviews. I think they both have questionable worldviews.
You're also dealing with a vampire man whose evil is rather apparent.
It is very apparent. So and talking about evil through the lens of a vampire is also just difficult because it's like, what would you do if you would just die? Like if you didn't drink blood. Like,
and you're put in a situation where you suddenly have freedom and can get vengeance. Like that's where we get into a very interesting psychological question. And that's where vampires shine.
Yes. But LOL. it's
sometimes.
How dare you invoke Twilight once in one property. One property. Freaking Twilight. I still have a little like teenage boy Spitfire in me for twinkling freaking vampires. How dare they?
I had fun with my time in Twilight. I think it's a perfectly fun vessel. I know that.
It gave us Robert Pattinson. I'm so glad that he wanted to scorched earth that reputation so bad that he went on to make shit that's actually interesting. I'm so here for modern day Robert Pattinson that I thank Twilight for existing. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Watch the Batman. That brings us to the end of this edition of the Grinding Gear Podcast. Huge shout out to our badass patrons for supporting us on Patreon. You can support everything Kyle and I do and are making together by going over to supportourbromance.com. It is, again, our Patreon-a-thon. We are very close to doing a pool stream, and I don't mean playing pool. I mean, we will stream from a actual swimming pool. Take your questions, probably play some drinking games. You know, just general outdoor debaucherous behavior.
With a little, you know, Q&A action.
I'm like, you need to finish that sentence, Kyle, because...
Oh, well, and also a great chance to, you know, test remote hardware and stuff like that. But that's just me metagaming.
Oh, that is not how we're doing it, because that is a dead zone out there. Everything will be hardwired, which is not testing any of that.
That's even so. Like, that's new cords, cables. They all need tested, man. You know, it's all meta at the end of the day.
Okay, all right. Anyway, we'd like to thank our recent patrons, of which they are Legion. Why don't you start today, Kyle?
With Imarashi, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Imarashi. Also, thank you to NoFXer2K.
Fortnite, spelled like the time of day.
Humberto C. Appreciate you.
Nyun? Nyun. I speak with confidence.
Frank P.
Purple Wreck.
Ashira M.
JG Giant.
Did you try to say that like JG Wentworth?
No, I think that I was doing more of a...
We are farmers.
Are farmers, yeah.
I wish ye. Thank you for becoming a patron.
Thanon.
Walrus 10.
John B.
Jackie.
D3L1.
Deli in Leetspeak?
Oh, it could be Deli.
Now I want a sandwich.
You kind of strapped for D's, I guess. Yeah. Zero.
Strapped for D's.
Strapped for D's.
Strapped for D's nuts. Snackle, thank you for becoming a patron. Appreciate you.
Steve.
Just Steve. I like to think it's Minecraft Steve. I like to think that it's...
The Steve?
It's the Steve. Oh, my goodness. Vexard, appreciate you.
Oh, where I lost my spot. Susanna P.
Mordwill.
Jeffrey C.
Adam C.
Jackass.
David G.
Taylor H.
Catherine L.
Just Bloom.
And Random Red Shirt. We're glad you stayed alive long enough to become a patron.
And thank you all so much for joining us during this Patreon-a-thon. I really, really appreciate y'all.
Yeah, thank you so much. Again, check out supportourbromance.com. We've got a $1 level, and you can also just set it to whatever the heck you want. Get in there with your meme amounts. Appreciate you all. And of course, we've got our legendary level backers. You can see them behind Kyle if he wasn't using a really nice lens. But a huge thanks to Sean B, Cheesy Bob, Lost Mythics, Zervon, Compside, Jedi Potty P, Bloodsy Von, Snuggle Gore of Vane, Shinny Geo, Nicholas C, Jerry T, Sean and Jen, Vernacular Ham, Brom, Vaslius, KLG Chaos, Kristen S, and Pins and Needles. Appreciate you all. Thanks for supporting us. Other than that, he's Dogcast Systems Gaming PCs. Head on over to you. Have been showing some wild stuff on screen today and throwing me for a loop.
Did you remember when we said we should set up scenes to move easily between the couch setup? Yeah, I did that. Now I keep pressing buttons.
Oh, okay. Like,
growing pains.
Okay. All right. We got to work on the clustering, I guess. The clustering. Or are you... Doesn't matter. Kyle and I use Dogcast Systems Gaming PCs. Go to dogcastsystems.com. Use the code BROMANCE. Get a 1 TB NVMe SSD drive for your trouble. You will also support us in the process. That is dogcastsystems.com. Code BROMANCE. Let them know we sent you. I'm Garrett Art on Twitter. Kyle is at Kyle Ferguson. You can follow us on the Blue Site, the previously Blue Site, any place you can maybe see content as long as it's not considered sexually explicit.
By complete accident.
By complete accident. Until next time. GG.
Take care.
which this week stands for Gay Icon Godbert.
Is gay icon one word?
It is for my convenience.
GG.